All right, we've got a great episode of Side Retired for you today, Dylan and Nico, as always. And Nico, we're going to be joined by a very special guest. So let's hit the intro music and get right into this thing. Hello and welcome to this edition of Side Retired. It's Dylan Campione and Nico Fernandez as always. And Nico, before we introduce our guest, how you doing today?
Can't complain, bro. I mean, it's not often that on a podcast with a kid from New York, we get some Boston guys. So I'm excited to have a guy from the Boston Red Sox. So ready.
Absolutely. So today we're joined by Steve Lyons. If you listened to our recent interview with Tom Brenneman at the end of his episode, he shouted out Steve as being a perfect next guest to have on the show. Obviously, they were in the broadcast booth for a while with each other, so they've known each other for a long time. But Steve, we're really excited to have you on the show, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, I was a little disappointed that the intro music wasn't the theme from Psycho. You know,
shut up.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I know a lot of the career highlights. You've been in Major League Baseball for a while, obviously as a player first. In the first round, you drafted by the Boston Red Sox. Once your playing career was over, you transitioned to the broadcasting side. Cool couple of side projects. I know Nico and I are huge MLB The Show fans, and we saw that you were associated with that game for a little bit. So a lot to cover in a short amount of time, but really excited to have you on. And I guess if there's anything else from a quick little bio standpoint that you want our audience to know about you, from the get-go before we dive into things.
Yeah, why don't I start with my hat? I'm wearing a hat from the Irish Wolfhounds. I'm a part of the Irish American Baseball Society. We're a group that's trying to put together dual citizenship players, guys that are both citizens of Ireland and also of the United States, to get a team into the WBC. I think a lot of people don't really understand that Ireland doesn't send a team from the WBC. There's been some resistance from the powers that be over there. They kind of want to stick with full-blooded Irish kids. But the only problem with that is you cannot compete at the level you have to compete at the WBC. If you don't take kids that have Irish heritage and are Irish citizens that live elsewhere. So I'm helping those guys out. And we're trying to get a team there sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. I love that.
Oh, yeah, it's great to hear. I mean, I would hope, because the thing about I feel about the WBC is that apart from, like, you know, some of like the at-large teams that you get really at the end, it's kind of very similar. So like you just get the same teams every year. I mean, I'm a little biased because like I like obviously seeing the US, I like seeing Cuba because I'm Cuban, but really it's kind of like the same teams competing, not really any much like variety in it.
Yeah, I think it really shows the dominance of baseball in those areas of the world. And obviously, Ireland does not have a dominant program, but by bringing awareness to baseball and bringing the sport there a little more heavily, you know, it takes time, but maybe the sport will gain some traction and you'll find some tremendous athletes that end up transitioning to baseball as time goes on.
Absolutely. I love that. And obviously another one of those cities that you've associated fondly with your baseball career is the city of Boston. Nico mentioned it earlier. You've got a lot of Boston roots, whether it's playing there, whether it's broadcasting there. I assume there's going to be a lot of Red Sox fans listening to this episode. So what does the city of Boston mean to your career and how much of an impact did it have on
you? It's kind of bittersweet. You know, they got me back there. They kept getting rid of me. I don't know how many times I've been fired, but you know, the greatest thing about getting drafted by the Red Sox and coming up through the Red Sox system was that my father was actually from Boston, but he was in the Army in Washington. That's where I was born. I grew up in Oregon. And when I got drafted by the Red Sox, my dad went through the roof. You know, I mean, back then, we could only watch the Saturday game of the week, you know, with Tony Kubek and you know, Joe Garagiola and whoever else was on. And if the Red Sox weren't playing that Saturday, we would just go play baseball. But if they were playing, me and my dad were glued to the TV watching Yaz and Freddie Lynn and those guys. You know, Yaz was my dad's favorite player and Fred Lynn was mine. So, you know, I grew up a Red Sox fan 3,000 miles away.
That's the exact same for me. I mean, I'm a Red Sox fan and I'm from Miami. So it's like every time I say it, everyone's like, why? And then I have to go into this weird explanation as to why I'm a Red Sox fan. But again, you're the first Red Sox guy we've had on, so I just really want to nerd out. You played a ton of positions at Fenway. What's it like playing in one of the most historic baseball parks in the world?
Well, you know, the greatest part was that I got a chance to do that in in both teams that I played for, because I played for the Red Sox, you know, for about 5 years over the span of four different times that I came back to the Red Sox. And then I also played in Comiskey Park for the Chicago White Sox for a 5 year stretch there in between. So you talk about two really historic cities, historic ballparks. It's amazing. I did a show on the History Channel that Peyton Manning hosts. It's called The GOAT. And the show that I was on was The Greatest of All Time Stadiums. And this was worldwide. So I didn't list Fenway as number one, only because I think the Coliseum in Rome is number one for many, many, many reasons, way too many to list on this show. But I listed Fenway as number two. Yankee Stadium was on there. That's a freaking dump. But and a lot of Cubs fans think that Wrigley compares to Fenway Park. It does not. It's not close. Fenway is the mecca of baseball. And if you consider yourself a baseball fan and you have not gone to Fenway, then you've done yourself a disservice.
Absolutely. Well, following up on that, I know we were talking about your Red Sox tenure and going through Wikipedia, which is definitely be a interesting place to get information from. Hopefully this one's right.
Correct. All one. Correct.
Well, we've got information that when you were traded from the Red Sox, you were traded for arguably one of the top five pitchers of all time. And obviously it was later in his career, but it was a one-for-one swap. Steve Lyons for Tom Seaver. Do you remember how that trade went down and what was your thought process realizing I was just traded for freaking Tom Seaver?
Yeah, it was crazy. I literally got called in my room at 1 o'clock in the morning from our manager, John McNamara. We were in Baltimore at the time. And he said, we just traded you to the White Sox. And I had heard rumors in spring training that I had heard that they were going to trade Tony Armas to the White Sox for Tom Seaver. And that never went down. And then about halfway through the season, after I made, you know, a bunch of, you know, base running mistakes and other crazy stuff, you know, I guess they decided to let me go over there. But, you know, if you have, of course, you know, Tom Seaver, God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore. But if you ever ask him about that trade, he never wanted to talk about it because he got traded for me. You know, I thought it was going to be great. I thought I was going to get a chance to go to Chicago and play more. I wasn't playing that much with the Red Sox that season in 86. And I thought I'd get a chance to play a little bit more. But, it, you know, basically the day I got traded to the White Sox, they fired Tony La Russa, who was the manager. And I thought that he really liked me and I'd get a chance to play for him. But Jim Fregosi took over as the manager and he literally didn't know who I was. So I knew it was going to be a real uphill battle trying to get any playing time. Playing for a manager who had no idea who I was.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the follow-up question to that wasn't the only two teams you played for. You played for a couple of teams over your nine-year career. What's it like having to go and, you know, bounce around or really just, you know, have to adjust to and adapt to, like, changes of scenery?
You know, it's not easy. You know, people look at the game and they see how much money the players are making and they don't really look at the off-field aspects of baseball. If you have a family, which I did, moving them to wherever you're playing, making sure they're safe, making sure they're secure when you're on the road is a difficult situation. Getting traded like I did in the middle of the season from Boston to Chicago. I flew from Baltimore where we were. I stopped in Boston. I packed a bigger suitcase, met the White Sox actually in Anaheim. They were on the road, flew in there, played that night, finished out the rest of the road trip. I don't remember where we went and then came back to Chicago and then had to find a place to live. My family's still in Boston. They need to basically pack up and get out of there and either go home or come and find me. At that point, it was close enough where we made the decision for them to just go home and then start the school year. And then we'd figure out what we were going to do after that. But yeah, it's not easy. You know, baseball is the same. You show up in the next clubhouse, maybe you know one or two guys on the team, or maybe you don't know anybody, but going out and doing your job on the field is exactly the same. You're just wearing a different shirt. You know, it was like Seinfeld used to say, we don't root for players anymore. We just root for lawn. You know, I was all of a sudden 2 days later, I was wearing a different shirt, playing for a different team, but I still got to go out and do my job.
No, I think that's the interesting thing about baseball and that a lot of fans just see the players, they see the lineup and they think of robots and they don't realize there's human beings behind these. And when a player's in the slump, maybe there's other reasons as to why it's going on. So really appreciate when there's answers like that that get to reveal a little bit behind the curtain.
In my case, you know, I spent basically my whole career in a slump. So I just, you know, I just made that good.
Well, there is one incident from your career in the playing field that I just checked. It has 300,000 views on YouTube, so it has circulated a lot. I think you're the only player in baseball history to take your pants off on the field. Do you remember this incident and know how it happened slash what happened?
Well, I can't forget it because literally it happened in 1990. So how many years ago is that? 30 something. And someone reminds me of it every single day of my life. So there's nothing I'll ever forget. It was, if you think about it, it might have been the smartest thing I ever did because it is something that people remember me by. I certainly didn't hit a home run in game seven of the World Series to help us win the World Series. I never got that opportunity. I just brain cramped. I had slid into first base. I had dirt in my pants. If I did that today, they would review the play and they would say that I was out because I was out, but the umpires called me safe. So Cecil Fielder, if you remember that name from way back when, and Dan Evans, or Dan Petrie. Dan Petrie was the pitcher. Dan Evans was the umpire. They were all arguing and they were saying a bunch of words that you can't say on this podcast. And meantime, I just kind of zoned out and forgot I was still standing there listening to them. And the dirt was running down the inside of my pants. And if you've ever played the game and slid head first, you understand that feeling. It's not comfortable. You need to pull your pants down and get all that dirt out so you can, so it's not in. And if you think about it, 50% of the time when you slide, you're out. And when you go back to the dugout, you run down the steps and you pull your pants down and you get the dirt out. So I just kind of prematurely did it a little bit before I got back. God, I was still standing out on the field.
Yeah, Dylan was talking about how like that's how he like knew you. When we were going into this podcast and he was like, "Oh, we're gonna have Steve Lyons on." The first thing that came to my mind was obviously former Red Sox. And I'm like, dude, there's another way that I know him. Like I just knew it and like I couldn't think of it. But and we come on, and he's like, he was the voice for MLB The Show. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I remember being a 9-year-old kid just on my PlayStation being and just hearing like, oh yeah, we have this game and it's brought with Steve Lyons. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, yeah, I just got flashbacks to when I was 9. How was that process? Like, how do you get on a video game like that?
I tell you what, I don't know if I can say this word on the podcast, but I got so screwed in that deal. Tom Brenneman was one of the announcers, and they I think they wanted to get rid of someone, and he suggested that I come in, so I got a chance to do it. And it's ridiculously tedious work. It's not a lot of fun. I would go down there, I'd drive down to San Diego, I'd be in a sound booth for 8 hours a day for 4 days, and I would lose my voice. And because they would give you'd be looking at a TV monitor and they'd give you a million things to say. And one of the things that didn't upset me, but I didn't think made the most sense was they would have me call pitches. And I kept saying, I'm the analyst guy. I'm never going to say this. But it would be like across the screen, it would say, fastball just outside, fastball in the dirt, fastball that's high, fastball that's too low. Fastball, ooh, that's in. And then you'd go over every pitch and it would take hours and hours, right? And then there would be new players that would join the big leagues. But overall, it was awesome. If you think about it, I'm complaining right now. I'm complaining because I lost my job because MLB The Show teamed up with the MLB Network and they told them that in order for them to do the deal and get their graphics, they had to use MLB announcers. That were working for the MLB Network, and I was working for the Dodgers, and it was $1,000 an hour job. Let's put it that way, and that's why I loved doing it and wanted to keep doing it. And I was so mad when I mean I've lost jobs before, and I've lost some jobs that I didn't think I should have, and I certainly lost that job for no reason at all. And I've been fired for reasons that some people might say, yeah, they should have fired you for that. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, I can explain, but nobody ever wants to hear the truth about what actually happened. They just see that you got fired and that's it.
Absolutely. Well, you've mentioned already you've had a great broadcast from here, whether it was Fox, the Dodgers, the Red Sox. How did this come about? Because obviously you were a Major League Baseball player, as you said, not the greatest baseball player in the world, but definitely around the game for a lot of years and probably wanted to stick with it. How did you decide, hey, I'm going to get into the booth and this is going to be the path that I'm going to go for?
Yeah, I always thought I had something to say. And the perspective from a guy who doesn't play every day and who's not a great player is in my opinion, it's a better perspective on the game than a guy that falls out of bed and gets three hits. You know, so if you look around, most of the broadcasters, although it's changing now, but in the past, most of the broadcasters, the good ones, were guys that weren't very good players because they relate to everybody on the field rather than just the best players on the field. Now the guys that have my job that I should still be doing are Derek Jeter and Big Poppy and A-Rod. And they don't even do a baseball pregame show anymore. They just BS about how great they were. You know, that's not what we used to do. That's not what we won Emmys for when I was at Fox and we did the pre and post game show and did games. But I didn't think I'd get an opportunity to broadcast because I wasn't a very good player. But I just kind of kicked and scratched. I did radio shows. I did a couple things for ESPN in the minor league baseball. And then I got my shot at Fox and I had a great audition. And, my career blossomed after that because I have a strong opinion. I'm not afraid to say it. But that's how I also get fired all the time because, you know, people don't like to hear the truth. Like I worked for the Red Sox for 8 years and they said they wanted to go a different direction because after the 2020 season, COVID, they didn't make as much money and they were paying me and they weren't paying some other guys. But I know it was because I was too critical because the Red Sox were literally one of the worst teams in the history of baseball in 2020. And I talked about it. I said, this is crazy. This is the Boston freaking Red Sox. They should be running a competitive team out there. And they're throwing, the guy that's pitching tonight pitched in Double A 4 years ago and hadn't gotten Double A yet. Why is he throwing tonight? Why are we doing this? So they don't like to hear the truth, even though, you know, as Nico knows, Red Sox fans, they can handle the truth. They want you to tell them what the truth is. But management and upper management and ownership, they don't. They want you to say good things about them day in and day out, whether they stink or they're good. And they've only been good once in a long time here, and that was 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything you just said there about the Red Sox, I completely agree with. I mean, I don't want to hear a guy talking about how the Red Sox are, yeah, you know, they're working hard. I mean, we suck right now. There's really not much for else to say about just stating the obvious, which is that we allow 7 runs a game, and it doesn't matter who we put on the field, 7 runs are happening every time. So just hearing someone be just like avoiding the obvious truth, it makes you feel dumb as a fan. That's the biggest thing that I see. Like when they talk,
made me feel dumb as a broadcaster. Like, I know you're listening to me. I know you're throwing stuff at the TV because I'm not telling you the truth. I mean, we're not the Kansas City Royals. We're the Boston Red Sox. We don't rebuild. We reload. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what the fans expect. And yes, that's what did for a long time. You know, 4 championships in 20 years, pretty good, but they've looked really ugly since 18.
And especially it seems like there's the World Series year and then it's torn down to 5th place, and then there's a really good year and it's torn back down into the 5th place. I think that was the worst to first to worst trio happens a lot with the Red Sox.
Crazy.
Absolutely. Well, I do want to ask though, because I know since you've been in the Red Sox broadcast booth, there have been a couple of things in Major League Baseball that have changed a little bit in these past few years. There's a clock. There's a weird extra innings rule. There's a lot of interesting rules happening in Major League Baseball. So we'd just love to hear your perspective on whether it's from when you were a player's angle, whether it's a broadcasting angle. What are your thoughts on 2024 baseball?
Well, you might have to name a few and I can react, but I can tell you that I think that baseball started going downhill when they introduced replay into the game, because at first they said they were going to use replay solely to tell if a ball was fair or foul on a home run. That was the only way they were going to use replay to get it right in that situation. And I knew as soon as they did it, I was a broadcaster doing work with Fox, doing the national games. And I said, this is BS, because as soon as they open the door for replay, it's going to be everywhere. And then they're going to start doing other stuff. And my problem with baseball right now is the computer geeks have taken over. Right? I can't name half the managers in baseball because they didn't play. You know, I can't. They have a guy on the bench who's called a quality control guy who's wearing a uniform who never played baseball in his life. I don't understand this stuff. I can tell you that it's going to swing back to baseball players running the show. Who won the World Series last year and who was their manager? Texas Rangers. Bruce Bochy, a baseball guy, not a computer geek. All the analytics that we've put into the game, some of them are good. Relying on them as heavily as the teams do now is ridiculous. I can't stand the rule changes. The only thing I like recently is the pitch clock. because I do want the pitcher to get the ball and throw it. What are you waiting around for? What are you looking up in the stands for? You know what pitch you're going to throw. Get on the mound and throw it. And the hitter's taking a walk around the umpire, standing there, doing your gloves seven times. I understand that it's a business for me. If that's sort of my routine as a hitter, I have to do what I do is best for me so that I can get a hit, so that I don't find my butt back in AAA in 2 weeks. I got to perform. But you got to adapt and you know, make your routine a little bit quicker so that you can get back in the box and pit and hit, and the pitcher can throw you the ball. The rest of the stuff to me is, you know, I sound like my father, you know, it's like I'm biting the hand that fed me, but I hate all the changes. I hate them.
I'll take your manager point even further. Before Bochy was Dusty Baker, an MLB lifetimer. Right. Before that, it was Brian Snitker, who I don't think made the majors, but was a coach in the Braves system for 30, 40 years. Before yep. that, you've got another player. I think Alex Cora with the Red Sox. AJ Hinch played with the Astros. 2020 was Dave Roberts with the Dodgers, played with the Red Sox. So, yeah, there's a yeah. sneaky trend that it's all the guys that played in some capacity, minors or majors, are the managers that are winning championships.
But all those guys are being forced to really look at the numbers. They come down to their desk. They want to be a manager. They want to be a coach. They want to out and talk to their team. And they have to sit down and over these reports that people have for them to look at. Oops. Are you guys still there? All right.
Yeah, you're good.
Stuff where all the analytics guys have sent down to them, and believe me, there I've heard managers slip up, like they're saying, hey, who's playing second base today, and the manager will say, well, shoot, I don't know if my guy has written out the lineup yet. I'm like, what? Who's writing out the lineup? You, the other guy, or the dude from upstairs? It's mostly the GM's writing out the lineup. To me, that's just it doesn't make any sense. Like the shift, right? I hate the shift, but don't tell me I can't do it. If you're managing a team and I know that one of your guys is going to hit the ball, like me, I was a dead pull hitter to the right side, dead pull, hit left-handed, dead pull. You should put six guys over there. And if you did, I'd never get a hit in my life. But now there's an artificial rule that says you can't do that. If I'm managing against myself, why are you telling me that I can't do the best possible thing I can do to get that guy out? Because I'm trying to win games. So I hated the shift, but I don't like that you can't use it. That's as much of on the field you'll ever see me.
No, I love it. Because I remember, I think it was Buck Showalter last week said that a night after Brandon Nimmo hit two triples, the analytics department told him that you couldn't play Brandon Nimmo because he's going to be tired from running around the bases a little too much. I don't know if you saw that interview, but yeah, that was last week. Buck said that
I would get fired again. If I was doing TV right now, I'd get fired again because I wouldn't be able to be like, what is going on?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like there's all this analytics, which yeah, look, we have a podcast, we do some stuff with analytics, like we look at them so that we can have like education on like what's good or not. But at the end of the day, like for example, this World Series. It came down to your guys. That's my whole thing about like analytics versus like just seeing stuff. At the end of the day, it comes out to who's hot or who are the best guys. That's who you look to. Really, like no one's looking when it gets to game seven of the World Series. Would you rather have Corey Seager lefty lefty or your bench right-handed hitter on a platoon matchup? I don't care about that platoon matchup. If I'm losing, I want to go with my guy. And that's why I think people miss with analytics.
And I think in 18, that was the biggest difference because they played against the Dodgers, right? And the Dodgers lost the year before to the Astros, right? And they were all mad about that. All Dodger fans. I live in LA. All the Dodger fans think that the World Series trophy go back to the Dodgers. You know what? Because they would have won if they weren't cheating. Now I thought you know everyone cheats. Everyone cheats. Unfortunately, I think maybe they took it a little too far to the electronic era and they were doing some stuff. You know, stealing signs the wrong way. And then think about it. Then at the very end, the way they would relay the sign to the hitter would bang on a trash can. They have all this electronics. They're doing all this electronical stuff to try to steal signs, and then they're banging on trash cans. So that was, you know, that all that stuff is bad. But at the end of the day, some of the analytics is really good. Some of it, you just can't rely on it. I think that was the big difference that the Red Sox did with Alex Cora is they poured all analytics on him, but they let him use his gut. He's there. He's the player. I can see right now. I can tell this guy is dazzling. I can also tell you the reason why I think that the Dodgers lost the World Series the year before to the Astros is because every time Rich Hill took the mound, they wouldn't let him go more than four innings. He went four innings twice, and they blew up their bullpen. And by the time they got to the end of the series, game seven or game six or whatever it was, their bullpen was dead because they let their starter go three innings because they didn't want to let him go two times through the lineup, which was just – it was crazy. You got to be able to look out there and say, I feel that he's okay today. He's not going to blow up, and I'm going to let him get in trouble. First guy ropes a double off the wall, I'll get him out of there. But I'm not going to get him out of there until the other team lets me know that he doesn't have his stuff anymore.
And the only time they won was in 2020 when the exact same thing opposite happened to them, when it was Blake Snell on the mound and he was had a no hitter, allows one dribbler through the middle. They're like, yeah, Blake Snell's done. He's going to get tagged, when all he's done is gotten a hit on a 60 mile an hour batted ball.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, you know, hey, I'm not bitter, but bottom line is I live here in LA and I worked for the Dodgers for 10 years before I came to the Red Sox and lost that job because they switched networks. What? How do you lose a job because they go from Fox to Spectrum? So believe me, the 2020 World Series, that's not a World Series win. What is that? 60 games. They didn't even count it. They should basically give you like a class ring or something that says you're the last one standing.
Oh, I love it. Well, I do have to ask because Blake Snell just came up. That's one of the big holdups in baseball that we're asking a lot of our guests is all four Boris guys, Snell, Montgomery, J.D. Martinez, Matt Chapman. It is March 1st almost by the time this is out, and none of them have signed. So I know whether it's as a player again or just talking about baseball, spring training started and is going strong, and they're just not signed.
And yeah, you don't have some of the best players in the game not playing the game. That's crazy to me. I know that, you know, I know that Boris has had cantankerous relationships with teams in the past, and he always wants top dollar, and he's not going to relent. And it's been amazing how, you know, it's funny how in the offseason you'll say, oh man, Boris wants $200 million for this guy, and the team's only going to offer him like $160. I wonder what's going to happen. You know what happens? He gets $200 million. He doesn't get $180. He gets 200. He gets exactly what Boris says that he's going to get. He's been a master at that. But I can also say that Scott Boris has maybe been, you know, you never hear about the players that he has that hasn't worked out all that well for him. But these guys are top-notch players that should be signed. But I guarantee you they're on the phone every day to him right now going, hey, Scott, what's going on? I didn't go into free agency this year waiting to be not signed before spring training starts. I mean, the Red Sox should be signing Montgomery. There's no question about that, but they won't. Yes. Full throttle. They won't. They're not. And because they're not going to sign him, they're not going to bring a guy onto a team that they don't have a chance to win with him or without him. So what's the difference? But yeah, it's crazy that there's a lot of guys out there that aren't signed right now that should be. And you know, it certainly doesn't speak to the economics of the game when we saw a guy sign for $700 million. There's money out there.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, which I think you could have like a good perspective on, is what's that effect when you're 3 weeks into spring training and you still haven't signed and you finally sign with a team and you basically have half the amount of time you have to prepare and actually see like live guys in games?
Yeah, less than that even. I mean, there's no way you make an appearance on opening day, right? And you got to get to know your teammates. You got to gel. You got to come together somehow. And, you know, the guys that you just named, the four guys you named, can you imagine those guys sitting around thinking, wait a minute, I'm not a good enough player to be on one of 30 teams out there? That there's not a team out there that could use what I do? Am I asking too much money, or am I in the market where I should be? Haven't I established myself as a decent player? You know, they sit around, they go to sleep at night thinking they're Steve Lyons. Like, I go to bed and I go, oh my God, I hope someone will just call me, offer me a AAA job and an invite to spring training. I'll sign.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely. Well, there is one guy that we haven't really mentioned that much on the podcast, and obviously that's Tom Brenneman, who did invite you onto the podcast with us. So the question is, have any fun Tom Brenneman stories or anything you think our audience should know about Tom? Because he came on last week, told a lot of fun stories about himself, but now we've got his broadcast partner for a dozen years on with us as well.
I'll tell you what, I love the man. I absolutely love the man. I might get emotional talking about him because I'll tell you what, he handed me my career as a game broadcaster. I always wanted to be a game broadcaster, but my first 5 years at Fox, I was on the pre and post game show. And then when Bob Brenly, who was his partner, took the Diamondbacks job, I got to go work with Tom. You talking about an amazing broadcaster. You talk about a guy who also basically lost a career because of a offhanded, off-color insensitive comment that he said off air, and was very much unlike who he is. This is a guy who every time I came to the booth, he would just say to me, "Steve, this is your show. You go do what you want to do." And he made sure that he ran what was going on, and he would reel me in if we got too far out in the bush, which I can do very quickly. But this guy never, ever makes a mistake. He's always spot on. It's a hard gig. And I would think maybe you guys, that's what you're aspiring to do some broadcasting or be in the media somehow, somewhere. It's a hard gig to do what he does. And I worked with him for, I think, 6 or 7 seasons. Never saw him make a mistake. Never didn't come prepared. Unbelievable. So, yeah, funny stories, not too many. Just a ton of admiration for a guy who should be doing Major League Baseball games and NFL football games right now today. You know, there should be something out there that's called forgiveness for something that you said that you didn't even mean. And, you know, it's so easy for they, who are those people out there that have the ability to cut your entire career off? This guy's been doing that stuff for like 20, 30 years. He's one of the best in the world at what he does. There's got to be something out there that says, you know what? Got to give this guy another chance. Deserves a second chance. I mean, there's second chances. This country loves second chances. Now, I've had like 3 or 4 chances, you know, so, you know, I'll still find another way to find myself getting fired, because if you have a lot of fun, you're going to find a way to get fired sooner or later. You know, it's the guys that are really boring. They'll work forever because they're never going to, you know, they're never going to say anything that's controversial. I mean, Fox literally hired me. They said, we need you to be funny. We need you to be controversial, and we need you to show your opinion. And then the one time they didn't like my opinion, they fired me. That's not right. That was after 11 years. It wasn't like I was a weekend hire. And that night, me and Tom Brenneman and Lou Piniella and a couple of the producers of the show and Chris Myers, who was our sideline guy that night, you know, we all sat in a room and cried. Really, it's what happened. And I was devastated, had no idea what was going to happen to me after that. So I'm still standing, though. I'm not working, but I'm standing. I'm retired. I'm kind of getting to that. I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to be completely honest. When we were doing the show before, like, I read it, I was like, oh, I want to see exactly like what happened in that incident, especially like with me, like, I'm lying. My family's from Cuba. They like escaped. And I read it, and I'm like, this is literally something that like, I'll go with like my friend and they'll tell me all the time. I'll laugh, and then we'll get back to like our conversation. Like, I think like with a lot of them, there's like ones like, oh, you can be here, you can be there. But me, especially like reading that, I'm like, this is the same thing that would happen if I'm on the couch with my friends in Miami.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I always tried to bring a sense of humor to the booth. I thought if you're going to listen to us for 3 hours, you better be a little bit funny. You better be entertaining, because sometimes the game isn't. And what I got fired for certainly wasn't, you know, my best stuff. It wasn't a great joke. But I think the simple fact that I talked about Lou speaking Spanish, and then I was talking about a wallet thief, because he was talking about finding wallets earlier in the show, and I basically accused Lou of being a wallet thief right after I said something in Spanglish, really, not Spanish, kind of like I didn't do a good job of speaking Spanish. I wasn't really trying to, but Fox and the powers that be there felt like I was saying, if you were a Spanish-speaking person, you would steal my wallet, which I wasn't saying that at all. I was basically insulting wallet thieves. I was basically saying, if you're a wallet thief, you're a jerk. You should know. And they put two and two together that no one else did. And I was fired before. I think I was fired before the game was over. That wasn't fun for any of us.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the key things that Nico mentioned is that we knew and recognized your voice from MLB The Show and from all your broadcasting careers. And as well as Nico said, I think it was when all of a sudden Tom came on the program and said, "Hi, Dylan. Hi, Nico." We were like, wow, we know that voice. That's a hell of an iconic name that we always know in here.
So good. He just gave me my career. He just said, "Steve, you go." He said, this is an analyst-driven sport on TV. I'll keep us in line. You say what you need to say." And I guess the only thing that I would say a feather in my cap is that I knew that Tom couldn't ask me a question about the game we were watching or about something else that was going on. He never had to be scared about asking me a question that I didn't know the answer. Like, he didn't have to think, hey, did you see that the game last night? See the three home runs in Cincinnati last night? He never had to worry about me going like, what? No. So I think I made him feel very comfortable doing his job, and he certainly made me feel comfortable doing mine.
Absolutely. Well, to wrap things up, because I know we did this on Tom's episode where we talked about who is the person you'd like to shout out next, and he gave us your brilliant name to go with next. So would you like to continue the tradition, maybe shout someone out from your journey, whether it's broadcasting, playing, Sox, Dodgers, Fox, anywhere in between, and shout someone out?
Yeah, you know, let's stick with broadcasting because it's sort of funny because my career as a player has been done for so long. And even when I asked for other broadcasting jobs, I was like, I forget my playing career. I'm a broadcaster. You know, you don't have to bring back some home run I hit in 1987 to say, hey, but I'll tell you who I think is going to be the next huge, big name broadcaster in general, but baseball maybe specific, but he does everything right now. And his name's Mike Monaco. And the only reason why he hasn't blown up so far is because he looks like he's 12. And that's the only knock that you can have on him. He's doing Red Sox games. He does ESPN stuff. He does basketball. He does football. Every night he's somewhere different. And he signed some kind of a deal with Nesson to do Red Sox games, but it's not, they should have cleared their schedule and given him every game. Whoever the smartest person out there right now will take that kid. I think he's 30, and they'll make him their number one guy somewhere, and he'll be that way for eternity. Mike Monaco, look him up, check him out, tell him, I said so.
Absolutely, will do. Well, this has been a blast getting to hear your story. I know Nico's had a smile on his face this whole time. I have as well. So we really appreciate all the fun times and all the insight. And thanks again so much for joining us tonight.
I mean, we never talked about when I was 3 years old, you know, swinging and hitting. What happened to that?
Want
to
talk about T-ball? We can stay on and talk about some T-ball. I was the best T-ball player in Miami, Florida for like a good 4 years.
Hey, so
Nico, I was like 4 and 7. I was the guy.
I'm so old that there was no such thing as T-ball when I was in Little League. I struck out everybody in the other team. Well, we'd win 27-0 every time when I was in Little League. I think T-ball came out when I was like 8th grade or something. So that was long since. I was like, what is this?
I think that just means we need to have you back on again at some point to hear more stories, which I'm looking forward to. But this has been a blast tonight so far, as a little teaser for what's to come.
We'll do Psycho 2.
Absolutely. Yeah. I need to find out about the nickname too at some point. All the more reason to come back on the podcast. But really appreciate all of it tonight.
Anytime. Good luck to you too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So for Dylan, Nico, and Steve, until the next time, the side is retired.